there's already a lot of competition on the West Coast, in the South, which is true. It's a pretty competitive market. You know, fortunately, in New England, at least for now, this will, you know, certainly change over the next few years. There aren't a ton of different options out there for guests. So that gave us a lot of freedom to kind of experiment and yeah, just see what works.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. So I recently took my family to this really, really cool, beautiful Airbnb in the Shenandoah Valley. Now, the host had left a list of, you know, reasonable checkout chores, and I was convinced that we had followed the instructions to a T. So you can imagine my total frustration when I got an angry message from the host asking why I didn't take the trash cans to the curb upon checking out. I was confused by her message and then realized that when she said take the trash out, she meant take the trash all the way out. And to be honest, I was like pretty annoyed by the message, right? I had just spent like over $1,000 on a long weekend and I had tried to do the right thing. I took the freaking trash to the trash can from the kitchen to the trash can. And I hate to admit it, but this little encounter with her at the end of the day compelled me to leave a 4-star review, which again, I never do. I think this was the first 4-star review I've ever actually left because, you know, I host this podcast with all you incredible people in short-term rentals and hospitality, and I know how important those 5-star reviews are. But again, her tone, the style, and really, quite frankly, just the request to roll the freaking garbage cans to the curb after spending $1,000 at your place, it was too much, right? Now, this host had clearly not heard about my new friend's Can Monkey, the Uber for trash service, because if she had, she'd have never have to worry about getting a 4-star review again. Well, you know, from me at least. What's that? Oh, you haven't heard of Can Monkey either? Oh my gosh. Well, friends, let me tell you about these new friends of mine who are solving all of the headaches surrounding trash and your STR. Can Monkey ensures that the trash cans at your Airbnbs are moved to the curb and back promptly on collection day so that if you've got a same-day turnover, your new guest arrives to a clean and empty trash bin. And for those unexpected situations like a guest leaving behind excess trash or an unexpected midweek turnover, their on-demand trash removal enables you to book a can runner. Cool name, huh? Right? Cool. Like it's like an Uber driver, but like for trash cans, like can runner. I think that's pretty cool. I'd get a t-shirt that said, like, I'm a can runner. Anyways, they'll send a can runner immediately to help come and remedy the situation. So for just $49 a month per property, Can Monkey will come pick up the trash and return your trash and recycling cans back to your home. No hidden costs. You are never locked into any long-term contract. And whether you've got one property or 100 properties, Can Monkey can have you up and running within a week. To learn more about why hosts love this Uber for trash solution, head on over to canmonkey.com and submit their form on their homepage to get more information about how Can Monkey can help you. Oh, and if you do, please, please, please be sure to mention that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way, and you may qualify for an exclusive discount off of your first month of using CanMonkey if you do so. So remember, if you go and submit the form, if you talk to the team there, be sure to say that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way. Never let taking out the trash be the reason you get a 4-star review. Ever, right? This is simple stuff. You should never get a 4-star review because you've required your guests to pull the cans to the curb. Let CanMonkey do it for you. All right, guys, learn more at canmonkey.com. That's canmonkey.com. In just a moment, you meet Boris Markovich, who created Lumen Nature Retreat in partnership with his wife, Susan. Lumen Nature Retreat is a luxury waterfront glamping resort nestled in the heart of New Hampshire's White Mountains. The idea for Lumen was born when Boris and Susan traveled from Boston to Argentina over a six-month road trip for an extended honeymoon. During this trip, their Toyota Land Cruiser had a rooftop tent that allowed them to camp at some of the most spectacular places, from bush camping in the middle of the salt flats and next to volcanoes to little campgrounds and campsites all over North, Central, and South America. Upon their return, they dreamed of being able to offer a nature immersive experience that enabled folks in their hometown, Boston, to escape the city for a long weekend in nature. And while they couldn't have known it at the time and couldn't have known how it would all work, that little idea that they had would end up becoming Lumen. In this conversation, Boris and I discuss how they found the perfect 20-acre plot of land for Lumen, how they decided on the type of units that they'd offer for people to stay in at Lumen, which of their unit types perform best and why, lessons learned when building a luxury product offering in a shared space, how they've differentiated themselves from other offerings in the market, what they're planning next, and so much more. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Boris. All right, Boris, we are live, good sir. How are you doing this fine day?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you. I said right before we hit record here that I've heard a lot about you, but that was actually kind of a lie. I haven't heard much about you, but I've heard a ton about Lumen, which is your company, obviously. So I've been wanting to get you guys on the pod for a while to hear the story behind this incredible experience, quite frankly, that you all have created. So thanks for making time for the chat today. One of my favorite questions to ask people, Boris, at the top of the show is just what they were like as a kid, right? So when you were 10 years old, if I had met you then and I asked you what you wanted to be when you grew up, what would you have said?
Oh, it feels like a lifetime ago. I think when I was 10, my dream was to be a magician. I was growing up in Eastern Europe, and I remember it wasn't easy, but I would get my hands on any sort of magic material I could find, you know, books, tricks, this and that. And eventually kind of went away. But for a few good years, I thought there would be a career path in that.
Wow. Did you have like magicians in your life or, you know, someone you admired that was a magician?
No. I think I've seen a couple of David Copperfield performances and it just blew me away. You know, when you were 10, it feels tremendous. So
yeah.
But then we moved to the US and I think I started to pursue a more entrepreneurial direction.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, I feel like that probably is just a testament to your, you know, creativity, right? Your sense of like wonder. Lumen in and of itself, I haven't been there, but from what I've seen of the place, of the property, it does evoke sort of like this like magical, it looks magical, quite frankly, from the photos at least. And I'm sure when you're walking through the property, it feels magical. So, hey, maybe there's some like nod to your 10-year-old desiring to be a magician self that came out in the context of what you guys built.
Well, thanks for mentioning that. I mean, we'll talk a lot about Lumen and kind of how, what the vision was when we put it together. But I think a lot of it, to be honest, is a testament to my wife and my partner, who is the main design force behind Lumen and a lot of the other real estate projects that we do.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that in a second. But why don't you just tell us like what Lumen actually is? So if folks who are listening to this conversation are active on Instagram, which many of them are, I'm sure they know Lumen. At least they've seen your content. You guys have worked with some incredible influencers. You guys have posted just remarkable content yourselves. And so I'm sure that the brand is at least somewhat familiar to folks. But for those who aren't active on Instagram, give us a sort of the lowdown on what Lumen actually is.
Yeah, so Lumen Nature Retreat is a landscape hotel with about 35 cabins and structures sprinkled throughout a really magical 20-acre property. We're surrounded by water on three sides, so that creates an experience where pretty much every guest gets a waterfront view. And it's a destination that really focuses on the outdoor experience. So we try to create this bedroom in nature concept. Mm. So our guests come to kind of get away from the hustle and bustle from the city. to just have a weekend outdoors, but with all the comforts of a boutique high-end hotel.
Yeah. And you guys are situated in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, is that correct? Or where is Lumen actually located?
That's exactly right. White Mountains in New Hampshire. It's really a pretty great location. We really lucked out with it because it's just about 2 hours north of Boston. But it's nice because it's got four-season activities. So whatever time you show up there, it's pretty special in its own way.
Yeah. And how did you decide to get into this development of this like landscape resort to begin with? Because you mentioned as a 10-year-old wanted to be a magician, then you moved to the States, you became an entrepreneur. We were talking about before we hit live here, and I know that you've got at least one other business that you operate. And so how did you come to terms with the idea to begin with, and what was interesting to you about building a hospitality business?
So ironically, a lot of it goes back to our honeymoon with my wife. So around the time that we got married, we decided to do a little adventure where we put our work on hold and we bought a 20-year-old Land Cruiser, Toyota Land Cruiser,
wow.
Put a rooftop tent, and then drove down from Boston all the way to Argentina.
To Argentina?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it was a spectacular 7-month road trip effectively. And one of the core elements of that trip was that we spent most of the nights camping on the roof of our vehicle. It had this special kind of rooftop tent that would pop up. And, honestly, it was pretty magical because one of the things that we remember most from that trip is just all kinds of places that we got to stay because we had that flexibility and freedom to just set up camp wherever we went.
Mm.
And when we came back, we got back to our regular work, some other projects, but we kept thinking about that experience and what it was like to just, spend time outdoors, camp out, and how convenient it was because, we had everything with us. So we already had some hospitality experience. My wife and I, we own a portfolio of about 10 properties in New England and Midwest that we operate as short-term rentals and vacation rentals.
Wow.
And we started to think about doing something on a larger scale, something with a focus on outdoor and camping, and to kind of bring that experience that we loved to New England. And one night, through that late night internet browsing, we've come across this small campground for sale. And the pictures alone look perfect. It was, it would open up with a view of a lake, and it was just very, very, very nice. Hmm. So we effectively emailed the owner. Within a day or two, jumped in the car, drove up, and that was the first step to starting Lumen.
Wow, that's amazing. So you guys get inspired from this road trip that you were on, and you guys had this. Oh, go ahead. You want to say something?
Yeah. Well, the road trip was a big part of it. And then the other thing is, right before we got married, we actually had an adventure where we spent a year and a half living on a boat in Boston, and that was our first experience, kind of living in a small, tiny space. It was about 300 square feet. And I think it influenced our love for good design and kind of well-done small spaces. So that eventually translated into some of the things that we've done at Lumen as well.
Wow, that's amazing. You're getting more interesting by the minute, Boris. This is exciting. So, okay, so you guys come back, you find this perfect plot of land. And one of the big questions I always have for folks, a lot of the people listening into this chat have done similar things and or are interested in, and by similar things, I mean, buying a piece of land, building some sort of like unique structure or a collection of unique structures on that land. Some people call it, some people are really more on like the traditional glamping side of things. Other people are building really cool glass A-frames. Other people are building Nordic style homes, some of which I know that you guys have at Lumen. And the spectrum varies quite dramatically here. But one of the questions I always have for folks is, once the land is acquired, how do you decide what units to put on the land? Because again, you guys are in the White Mountains, right? It sounds like this beautiful, I mean, it is a beautiful spot. You've got this gorgeous lake, right? How did you decide what cabins and really just structures to put on the land?
It was a bit of a journey, to be frank. Again, we've had some experience with traditional real estate, traditional renovations, but this was kind of a whole new ball game. So when we acquired the land, we had some ideas that were floating around. We've seen some things that were inspirational to us, but we weren't yet sure exactly what we would do. We did, however, have a strong feeling that no matter what we end up doing, we'll be able to make something work with that land. Just because it was well located, it was priced reasonably, and our risk at that particular stage was fairly small. So pretty much as soon as we put the property under contract, we started to do research. And the first direction that we went was the direction of tiny homes on wheels, tiny cabins on wheels. That's what we were pretty interested in, seeing that done well elsewhere, and seemed like a good concept. But yeah. Around the same time, we've also come across a number of vendors that would do various glamping structures. Interestingly enough, some of the best vendors that we've come across, they were based in Europe. Mm. And this is one of the trends that we've noticed, is that I would say in Europe, this whole industry of kind of the unique landscape hotels, outdoor accommodations, is to some degree even more developed than it is in the US. So we've been able to find some really good examples there. And we just had a couple of criteria. One, we wanted to be able to eventually operate year round. It didn't necessarily have to happen on day one, but eventually that was the objective. Two, we wanted to have a mix of different structures, because we generally believe that a bit of variety, if curated well, is a big positive. Yeah. And then three, we had a certain budget, basically the amount that we were able to borrow from the bank, as well as some friends and family private investors. Yeah. So those three criteria were our starting point.
And so you guys landed, if my memory serves me correctly from scrolling your Instagram, you've got like a Nordic style cabin, you've got a like more traditional canvas tent, and then is there a third unit type, or are those the two?
That's right. We have three different types. So at one side of the spectrum, we have A-frame tents. Those are very simple but very beautiful structures. That are, again, pretty simple at its core. We have about six of them. Then we have safari tent structures. We have a handful of those sprinkled around. And then we have about 20 micro cabins on wheels, effectively. And the micro cabins are the ones that are designed to be operated year-round.
Okay. Wow, amazing. Last minute cancellations suck, and that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any 3-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest, and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form, and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. I want to hear a little bit about the performance of these units, and really maybe if you'd remember, you could tell us like your expectation going in versus like what reality has been. Because again, I know for a lot of entrepreneurs that are interested in building in sort of the unique stay space, there's always this question of like, okay, well, I like A-frames or I like a yurt, but does anybody else? And like, you know, there are some comps, more comps today than ever before, but like a lot of like the you know, unique stays are in like, you know, the middle of the country or the Texas Hill Country or very remote areas. I'm not as familiar with many in like the New England area, quite frankly. And I assume a lot of that is just because of like, you've got Getaway that has a couple outposts, but you don't have like a lot of like boutique operators in that space. So talk to us a little bit about like the units, how you thought they'd perform, and then what reality has actually looked like.
Okay, great question. So we can unpack it in a couple of different ways. So the first one is, I'll start at the end first. You pointed out something quite interesting. You mentioned that there is already a lot of competition on the West Coast, in the South, which is true. It's a pretty competitive market. You know, fortunately, in New England, at least for now, this will, you know, certainly change over the next few years. There aren't a ton of different options out there for guests. So that gave us a lot of freedom to kind of experiment and just see what works. In terms of how the units and how different units ended up operating, I would say that they were all successful in their own way, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And they ended up meeting or exceeding our expectations, but maybe for some of the factors that we didn't expect. So what we didn't expect, for example, is the fact that within about 2 years of operations, we've been able to get about 70% of our bookings come direct from social media. And you know, traditionally, before we opened up Lumen, all of our other properties, they were, you know, pretty much 100% relying on Airbnb, Vrbo, and other OTAs. And with Lumen, it was a very different breakdown. So the OTAs are still quite important as a discovery mechanism, but again, the more and more bookings happen directly. Now, to come back to the question about how each type of the units performed. So it's fair to say that the year-round cabins, for example, they would be at the top of the spectrum in terms of how much revenue they can generate, in part because it's a maybe slightly more premium product, but also because it can be open year-round. So effectively, it's going to generate more revenue. But the investment is also higher. The safari tents, for example, they are somewhere in the middle where the investment is much, much lower than a cabin. They can only be run, let's say, 6 months out of the year. But let's say cash on cash return, honestly, ends up being pretty similar. And then the A-frames, what's really interesting about them is they're also pretty popular. They're priced the lowest out of all three of them. But even if revenue-wise, they may generate a little bit less than their peers, what they add is aesthetics. Because basically, you know, the A-frames are incredibly picturesque. They show well. They show well on social media. They attract a lot of attention. So this is kind of where you have to use that maybe a little bit of a sixth sense, where even if in a spreadsheet it performs a little bit worse as a standalone unit, when seen as a part of something bigger, as part of the entire package, it holds its ground pretty well.
Yeah, it's like the gateway drug, right? Like it gets people looking at it. It gets people interested. They Google Lumen or look you guys up on Instagram, and then they find like the cabin or the safari tent, and they say, "Oh, you know what? I'd actually rather stay there."
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a different audience too. You know, for the A-frames, it's a very romantic getaway for couples. So we get a lot of elopements at Lumen. So, and people oftentimes will rent the A-frame. They will have the photographer come. So it's a very nice kind of experience. For the safari tents, it's much more family focused. In the summer, you have a lot of parents with kids come out. It's just a good introduction to camping. And the cabins, kind of the Nordic style cabins that we have, they appeal to a very wide demographic, and they're just very stable earner, so to speak.
Yeah. I'm curious. I think you mentioned. Are all of the units that you guys bought, were they like prefab? Like, did you buy them from European distributors? Did you guys like design any yourselves?
So, yes and no. The tent structures came from Slovenia and Netherlands, and those are pretty much prefab. We just assembled them on site. The cabins, so we worked with a great builder based in Tennessee. They already had a really good foundation, kind of the platform on which we could make a lot of modifications, improvements, add our own style, and they were able to ultimately build it for us.
When you guys think about that, because that's another question that a lot of people get is like, okay, do I go and do I buy something? Do I buy like a plan from a known person, a known entity in the space? Do I go prefab? Right, you're seeing these like, you know, mirror houses from like Oud like pop up everywhere, and you're seeing more of these like unique stay types that you can kind of buy online with three buttons, right, and then get something so freaking cool looking. And then there's that question, right, of like, okay, at what point in time does like prefab no longer like feel unique, right, when there are too many of these all over the place? And that's a separate conversation. But how did you guys think through sort of like the pros and cons of working with an already established design versus, coming up with something from scratch yourselves?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of factors here. The first factor is your particular property and the competition around you. So for example, if we look at a market like the Catskills in New York, the upstate New York, it's a very competitive market here. There's all kinds of products. So if you're developing something there, ideally you have something that doesn't yet exist in the market, and you do something unique. So that's again one factor. You have to look at the competition. The other factor is to some degree budget, your level of experience, and your risk level. The nice thing with all of our structures is that we knew up front pretty much exactly how much everything is going to cost. So that made it, by the time everything was said and done, we were within maybe 5 to 10% of our original budget. So we came pretty close. Yeah. And again, it's a project that ultimately took us about 3 years to implement in full. So again, for us, that was helpful. When we do the next Lumen in a different location, again, we're going to look at what's already in that particular market before we make the final determination of what exactly we would do there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good answer. For folks, I get questions from people all the time around like, hey, do you know anyone who can talk about whether or not I should just go buy this, Den Outdoors design and then hire like a local builder here who's familiar with Den and their designs as an example, right? Or should I go work with an actual architect and build something like actually like one of one, right? And there are obviously totally pros and cons to both approaches. What I like about what you said was that a lot of it really does depend on your risk tolerance and your experience. Like maybe you are in a market where, hey, there are A-frames everywhere, and so using a Den product might not make a lot of sense. In which case, if you've done this once or twice before, cool, take the risk, go freaking work with an architect and design something that is Insta-worthy and something that you can only claim it as your own. But if you're maybe a younger or less experienced entrepreneur, you've already spent a lot of money on the land, like you need to get up and running as quickly as freaking possible, right? To test your concept. Then there's nothing wrong with prefab. We know, right? That people will stay in safari tents. You know that people will stay in these Nordic style cabins because they do stay in those places in other markets, right? So I thought that was a good answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming back to that whole question of risk, again, when you're doing maybe two or three units, it's one thing. When you're doing, let's say 20 cabins, And you underestimate something by, you know, 5 or 10 grand. I mean, these things scale very quickly in both directions. So it's nice to know up front what you're going to spend.
Yeah. I want to talk about the brand of Lumen. And I know that you mentioned that your wife is hugely influential in the forming and the cultivating and the curating of the Lumen brand. But one of the questions, you know, I have anytime I meet somebody who's developed something like you guys have is how do you think about, like, at what point does the brand come into the conversation? Like, is it at the beginning you guys had this vision of like, this is Lumen and this is what it's going to look like and this is what it's going to feel like, and all of that was like on paper before, you know, you broke ground? Or was the brand something that was developed on an ongoing basis as the project was unfolding?
Yeah, no, I think that we had an idea of what we wanted very early on. And I think that even before, before we even closed on the land, we already had a couple of internal PowerPoints where we were hashing out the exact details for what we envision this to be. And for us, we end up traveling a good amount, or at least we used to before we had our daughter. And I think that we've been exposed to a lot of the things that we like, that we don't like. So all of that contributed to, to the original vision. But the short answer is the brand is very important. And it's very good to define it very early on because it's going to guide a lot of your decisions.
Yeah. When you think about like the name Lumen, right? Like how did you guys arrive at the name? What's the story there?
So Lumen is effectively a word for illumination. And we had this image early on, even from our own days of camping, is imagine kind of a tent somewhere outdoors in nature, surrounded by a blanket of stars, nobody around you. But the tent itself is lit up because you're inside, there's a light on, and it's this sense of coziness and warmth and comfort that you associate with. So that's kind of the feeling that we wanted to create, that when our guests come to Lumen, they come to experience the outdoors, and everything that comes with it, but we want them to feel extremely comfortable and at peace when they're there. So
yeah, I love that. I love the name. It's totally solid, and it's quite versatile too, because like sometimes people build a brand around, like, if you were to have, for example, Treehouse or A-Frame or something like that as part of your brand name, that can be quite restricting, right? As
exactly.
You grow. And Lumen, you could do a lot with it. It's almost like this umbrella that you could, you could have locations everywhere, but then you could develop other product lines that are related to Lumen. You're an entrepreneur, I'm sure you've already thought of these things, but like, it's a fantastic name. I absolutely love it. I wanted to ask a little bit about the management, right? So you said about 35 structures on this land. I mean, that's a lot of work. Do you guys have people like that? And you guys don't live on site. You guys live in Boston. Do you have people that live on site? Like, how big is like the Lumen team?
Yeah. So the way that we structured it is a little bit unique, and it's also what makes our operation maybe again a little bit unique. So we do have a team on the ground. On the ground, we have a general manager, we have two maintenance folks, and we have a housekeeping team that we contract with that handles all of the turnovers for all the units, a bathhouse, a common facilities such as saunas and whatnot. However, on top of that, we actually have a remote team that's about 5 people, and they handle all of the remote operations, including guest communication, pricing, maintenance coordination, all of that for both Lumen and all of our other properties.
Wow. Okay.
And it works out really well because this way, we don't have a traditional front desk or kind of a check-in desk. So whenever guests make a reservation, of course, they will get all of their information up front. If they have any questions, they can always call or text the number. We, from 9 a.m. until 11 p.m., we have staff that monitors and is able to respond within minutes. And then, of course, again, if we need to pull in somebody local on the ground, we're able to do that as well. But having the remote team allows us to scale much more effectively.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's remarkable. It's a serious operation, and I was curious how you guys were making that work. You know, one of the things that I'm always like cognizant of as I talk to folks who have done these like really impressive things is just quite frankly like the amount of work it takes to set up a team who is not all on site, right? You guys as the entrepreneurs behind this are off site. You've got a local team, or excuse me, a remote team handling all the communications. And then you've got like the ground control people, right, who are actually making sure that people get to where they need to go, right? And I mean, that's just it's an incredible amount of like coordination. What does your like day to day involvement in the business look like? Like, are you guys doing like team stand ups? How hands on are you and or you and your wife?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll actually give a little bit of context to this as well. You mentioned earlier that we were talking before the podcast started, and I have another company, an electric bike company that I've been operating for the last 12 years. And what's really interesting about the electric bike company is that our entire 12-person team is also remote, spread out around the country. So for us, operating in a remote fashion has always been kind of second nature. So when we started doing short-term rentals and then eventually Lumen, our mindset was also, okay, what tasks can you do that you don't have to be on the ground? So again, guest communication, pricing, coordination, supply ordering, all of these things, you don't have to be right there to do it. So we can do it more effectively in a remote setting. That said, in terms of our day-to-day operations for myself and my wife, it varies from week to week. We for the last 3 years, every year we've been doing a lot of development on the property, and we're still working it now. So we're heavily involved in that. We do weekly meetings, both with our housekeeping team to make sure that we can review all of the good and bad things that may have happened during the week. We have a weekly meeting with our management team, and then we have a weekly meeting with our remote team. And then I'm on the ground at least once a week as well. So I'll travel to Lumen every single week.
Wow, amazing! This is fantastic. So when you guys think about growth here, right? You guys have your portfolio of other STRs. Then you've got this landscape, micro resort, hotel, however you guys talk about it. Do you want to grow? I think you mentioned something earlier on about maybe the next Lumen. So talk to us a little bit about how you think about, the next few years for the Lumen brand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say that we love what Lumen has grown to, and we do see a ton of potential in it to scale further, especially because, again, we've been able to separate a lot of the day-to-day operations in a remote fashion that we can apply to every subsequent property that we add to the portfolio. So we are looking to doing a Lumen number two in the next couple of years, and we're actively looking for land for that as well. We're also open to partnering with others who may already have land in place, but want to perhaps develop it into a landscape hotel and need assistance, whether it's from management or design or operations perspective. So we can add a lot of value there. But ultimately, we're in a really good position because we don't have a lot of investors. We can grow at our own pace and take our time if we want to. So it's a really nice spot to be in.
Have you guys talked about whether or not you'd ever like license or franchise the Lumen brand? Because this is something that it hasn't happened a ton in like the unique stay realm yet, but I have to believe like this is like the next chapter. Because it's really hard to build a brand. It's really hard to build an audience. It's really hard to build and be able to design something that people really want to come and are willing to pay a premium to continue to come to visit. And, you know, once I go to the White Mountains, you know, a couple times, maybe it's like, okay, great. Nothing against Lumen in the White Mountains is beautiful. I love it. But like, I don't only want to go there for the rest of my life. Right. But I would absolutely go to, I don't know, like, you know, somewhere in the Rocky Mountains where there's Lumen number two or whatever it is. Right. Because I want to travel there. And it's a trusted brand in the same way that I might stay at, like, you know, the same hotel brand because I trust it. Have you guys had any conversations around brand licensing and or franchising?
Yeah, so when we look at the overall industry, I think that traditionally most brands, if successful, kind of start to grow where they control all of their future assets as well. They will usually raise mm-hmm. additional funding and basically do, you know, location number two, number three, number four, kind of under their own portfolio. And, you know, whether we look at Getaway or AutoCamp or Under Canvas, yeah. they all kind of follow the same model. I think that the licensing and the franchise or the franchising or some hybrid of the two is certainly interesting and certainly something that we're always open to and discussing. But, you know, we haven't necessarily made the first move towards that. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. If, for now, we're open to anything that comes our way, but in the meantime, we'll continue to kind of look for the second location on our own as well.
Yeah. Did you guys source a lot of inspiration from other people doing similar things in the space when building Lumen? And if so, like who were those people? Like, where did you get your inspiration from?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we looked at a lot of brands. I mean, we know of a lot of brands that we like and that we admire. So of course, you know, there's a couple of big players that everybody knows that we also learned a lot from, whether it's, you know, AutoCamp, Under Canvas, Getaway, and the like. But there's also a couple of, smaller brands that we really like. One of them is called Eastwind. They own three hotels and cabins, in New York area. There's another property that we really like called Tourists Welcome. It's a small 50-room hotel in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. Lots of brands and lots of small, again, brands that may only have one or two properties, but they do it really, really well. And oftentimes you will kind of look at a particular element and think like, wow, that's really clever. And then you create your own version of it.
You mentioned that about 70% of your bookings are coming from social media right now, which is amazing. And that number is just for listeners who might be like, no way, like that's crazy, right? That for folks like you who have invested in building something unique and have invested time in building social, like I've heard 70-80% is from multiple people. So like that is that's what you can get if in fact you do the hard work of like building a brand and building and sharing that brand story on social. How much do you think you spend in, or just even just in terms of time in on like the social front then to develop the content that's necessary to generate 70% direct bookings?
So we're very lucky. We have a fantastic social media manager who actually specializes in short-term rentals and vacation rentals and properties of the sort. So she manages all of Lumen activity, as well as she has a handful of other clients as well. A lot of our growth comes from working with influencers as well. So every month we'll typically have at least one or two influencers that we invite, or sometimes they will reach out to us that stays with us, and they create a lot of content. And we also invest a lot into professional photographers and videographers, where, you know, we'll be happy to compensate them if they create work that we admire and they happen to be in the area and want to stay. So kind of a combination of all of those things play a big role.
Yeah, I think that this is like something that is too, we're not there yet, but I'm curious in the next like 2 years, mm-hmm. how people are feeling about like influencers and creators in general coming and, you know, staying for a night and or people that are compensating them, only because like, right, it's like there are so many people now that want to be and or quite frankly are like great travel photographers or great, you know, travel videographers. But you get to a point where it's like, okay, is there more content to be created? And is it really worth giving you this, like, you know, free night, which is costing me $500, $1,000, whatever it is, and then paying you on top of that for a couple reels or whatever it is? Like, it'll just be interesting to see. And quite frankly, right, you can, if you spend any time on Instagram, you see like, oh, there's this one thing that the algorithm is favoring right now, and literally every cool hospitality brand now has like the same format for like the, you know, tag the person, you know, send this to the person that you want to go to the White Mountains with, right? Like, and that kind of content, right? And people do it because it, you know, freaking works. But it's like, oh gosh, like, are we going to get to a point where it's going, where people are going to care less about audience development and maybe even like direct booking coming from social, and instead want Instagram to really just be this place that is a true visual extension of the brand? And who cares if it's this huge traffic and or booking driver? I don't know what the answer is, by the way. I just thoughts I've had.
And it's interesting too, because again, I come from an e-commerce background with the electric bike company, with a lot of the other projects I've been involved with. And, you know, traditionally in any business, you will typically allocate a good chunk of your budget to advertising. For e-commerce, it usually happens to be Google Ads. So here it's, you know, for now, social media works well. So we're happy to spend money on it and plan a budget around it. But equally so, I mean, we'll also pursue, we have a wonderful, tremendous actually PR person that's been very instrumental in helping us get some media coverage. We do a little bit of Google marketing as well through Google Maps and Google Ads as well, but maybe not at scale just yet. But it's all of these things that add up.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the reward, right, at the end of the day is like, okay, well, that 70% number, right? And you then own that guest data, you own that guest info, unlike you don't own it if they come through Airbnb, right? And that in and of itself is highly valuable. Hard to put an actual like number to for lots of reasons, but like I think most people listening to this conversation would rather have the contact information of their guests than not have that contact information.
And you know, one other thing that that operators should really keep in mind, and you know, most people, I assume a lot of operators already know it, but I think it's worth sharing, is when you are competing on an OTA, you know, whether it's again Booking.com or Airbnb or such, you are to some degree competing on price as well, right? Because you're side by side with, you know, dozens and dozens of other listings that may look similar to yours. When somebody comes to your brand website, they will oftentimes be a little bit less price sensitive. I mean, within reason, but again, they're there because they want to experience your particular brand. And oftentimes they will pay a premium for that. So that's one. And then two, you can also do much better upsells when you do direct bookings. So that's a big factor as well. So I think it's fine. It's in fact necessary to spend on advertising or marketing, whatever it may be. Because oftentimes it'll show itself through better bookings, higher average daily rates, and so on.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, the people that are doing this well too, right? Like they realize, oh, wow, if I have an influencer come out on like a random Tuesday night or Wednesday night, the unit could be, not booked anyways. Like the grand scheme of things, it's not that expensive. And you know, I have a background in growth marketing myself. And, you know, when I see what these people are charging and are getting, you know, giving for what they're getting, it's like nothing. In the grand scheme of things, it's like, wow, like you just gave this, you know, incredible hospitality entrepreneur all this content for like a one night stay and, you know, a couple hundred bucks or whatever. Like, I know it ranges dramatically, but it's like, you could never find a marketing agency to hire to do something like that ever. You know, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah. And you get to capture, I mean, when you do this, again, when you have a lot of influencers, photographers, videographers on the premises, you get to capture a lot of interesting things. Like in the winter, we had this one case, one photographer who's an amazing photographer. He managed to actually capture the Northern Lights, the Aurora, at our property.
Wow.
And it was fantastic, but it's also hard work because he would have to stay up until maybe 4 o'clock in the morning, in the freezing temperatures, you know, to get those shots. Again, it's it takes a dedicated individual to do that. Yeah. And so, yeah, we've been very lucky with that.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, Boris, this has been an awesome conversation. I really appreciate you and the time that you've taken to share a little bit about your story with us and what you guys are building. It's unbelievable. It's very, very beautiful. I love the brand. I can't wait to see what you guys do next. For folks who are tuning into this conversation and want to learn more about Lumen, I'll have links to your website, your Instagram, all that fun stuff in the show notes below. But is there anywhere else folks should go if they want to talk to you? We do also get like a number of people who will write in and ask if I can make intros. People that are interested in investing and or people that might have land already. So for those sorts of inquiries, what's the best way for people to get in touch?
Yeah, I'm pretty old school. So it's email boris@stayatlumen.com.
Beautiful. I will have that linked in the show notes below as well. But thank you so much for your time, sir. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote-unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.